G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Adam White's ready to go on a Friday morning. He's ready to go every morning. Well, most mornings. He's back again. Morning, Whitey.
You're up and about today. Ryan Fox, one of your favourites.
Foxy is my man.
Raymer and I will go and have a cup of tea and something to eat while that interview is going on.
You can do that.
You go about your business.
You can do that. Yep, you can do that. I'm happy to talk to Ryan.
Outstanding
golfer.
New Zealand's second highest ranked golfer went into the event this week as the favourite.
Who's the highest ranked?
Well, there you go. 1-300-652-927.
No, don't go turning this into a quiz, mate. Don't be turning this into a quiz. That's not going to happen on my watch.
50-52, who is New Zealand's highest ranked golfer?
Is Frank Nobolo still playing?
No. Michael Campbell.
Shut up, you haven't introduced you yet. Adam Ramanauskas is a former Bombers champion these days, manager to the Stars. Just getting Ben Brown 1 year at a time at the moment, day by day. Good morning, Rama.
Very good morning.
Who is the New Zealand golfer to win the Players' Championship at probably 600 to 1? Now, golf commentator who is not Frank Nobolo.
Well, so the only person I know in New Zealand golf is Frank Nobolo. No, that's not true. Michael Campbell, you're right. Yeah. You're right. Outside of the current crop of Ryan Fox.
Craig Perks.
Never heard of Craig Perks. No. When did he win the Players' Championship?
Oh, probably about 15 years ago.
I've never come across his name.
Look at the text messages come through. How excited they are.
Haven't seen any.
The quiz is coming back. She's about to blow up.
That's garbage, by the way. There's two. And one of them is from Juppy, who just can't get enough of the show, which we think is fantastic. Another one just...
No, it's not. It's saying good morning to Juppy. It's not actually saying... It is Juppy.
Oh, I reckon that's Juppy.
Anyway.
And the other one just says quiz. That's all it says. Send us a message.
In capital. Just so excited. It's back. Quiz.
No quiz. There is a quiz-free zone here on the Breakfast Club. It has proven to be a disaster for our ratings.
The quiz can come back when Harf goes on holidays at some stage this year, which he will, because he always has a little getaway.
In the middle of the year, are we gone?
I think then when you're running the ship, Whitey, I think we can have the quiz on.
So disappointing. I really want it back.
there's no.
Anyway, the highest ranked New Zealand golfer is Danny Lee.
Is he?
Just ahead of Ryan Fox. Now, I must confess I'm surprised by that. I thought Ryan may have just been ahead of Danny Lee, but that is not the case. They're just both outside the top 100.
Well, there you go. I wouldn't have picked Danny to be ahead of Ryan. Danny did a very funny WhatsApp video chat for one of our groups, which has a golf flavour. The great Mark Allen got him to do a video chat for us. He was very humorous.
Okay.
Very humorous. He's got some personality, Danny. So I'm okay with that he's number one out there at in New Zealand golf. We will touch base and talk a fair bit about the New Zealand Open this morning because of Zach Murray, the defending champion, Ryan Fox, my man, through the morning. Did you watch the footy last night, you two? You're both Essendon men.
I'm just a lover of football.
Well, there's a grey area there.
I watched bits and pieces. I watched a fair bit of it. Watched a bit of the cricket as well. I was doing other bits and pieces, so yeah, I did. I was actually quite surprised, to be honest.
Surprised at what?
I was surprised at how well Essendon played at times. But I'm going to throw this at you now. I don't know the answer to this, and I haven't really checked it probably as much as I could, Rama. But watching it last night, I'm thinking, where are all of Essendon's injured players that are not playing? Where's the injury crisis? Mm. Because when I watched them play, most of their good players were out there. Yeah, there were some missing.
Yeah, there's a couple missing.
But there wasn't, you know what I mean? Like, and we've talked about this over the last few weeks, that this injury crisis, we believe, is overstated and it's become a bit hysterical. Surprise, surprise. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of their players were out there last night. There's no Heppel, there's no Hooker, there's no McKenna. Sard's playing in the State of Origin game. Obviously, we know about Joe Danaher, but generally, most of the players were there, and they actually played quite well.
And that may have just been the story that the media were looking for. I think Essendon haven't hid the fact that they had a lot of injuries over the pre-season, but they also had said on many occasions that they expected a lot back in January to be training and then hopefully playing games. So I think, you know, last night, Heppel, Danaher, Bell Chambers.
So Bell Chambers would be their number one ruck, but yep. I don't think there'll be too much difference between him and Phillips.
Yep.
Because, you know, obviously Bell Chambers is coming towards the end. Ambrose is the other one.
Yeah.
Ambrose, PCL.
McDonald, Tip and Woody.
Well, he played.
Well, he played.
I was going to say, I thought he played last night.
Played last night.
He's on their injured list. But there wasn't too many that were out. Now, some of them were on restricted duties.
Yep.
But, yeah, I think it's just been this story that's come out of control because of the whole Melbourne link from last year and all that sort of thing.
And put that to one side, it was a good game of football last night.
Yeah, it was.
It was fast, it was free-flowing. We saw Tim Kelly for the first time in West Coast colours. Looked just.
How do you look?
Fine. He looked like Tim Kelly.
Did what Tim does.
Yeah.
Gets a lot of
Josh Kennedy kicked six. He looked terrific.
Good. I want Josh kick 100.
Why isn't Luke Shuey playing in the State of Origin?
I find that a little bit odd.
And maybe he didn't put his hand up for selection.
I think he would have if he was playing last night. I thought Zach Merritt is stiff, but there's a lot of play. Like, you look at the list of State of Origin, list of players in that State of Origin game. It's a very good team.
Yeah, but Luke Shuey.
Should be playing, no doubt.
And he's a Victorian.
I thought Anthony McDonald, Tip and Woody
might have a
probably
wedding.
Should have been playing also.
He might have a wedding.
We had to one, of
those
half-time.
One of those cricket situations. He was going to open the batting anyway. Just go hard for 20 overs and go to the wedding later on.
Have you ever had that opportunity in a game of cricket where you've had to leave early?
Yep. Made 127. Not out. Walked off 23 overs in.
I used to have to leave cricket.
True story.
I used to have to leave cricket early in under...
I was coaching my son's basketball team.
Under 12s to go, because I didn't go to a Catholic school as a kid, and my mum wanted me to do my confirmation, so I had to open the batting. Then mum would come and pick me up about 9:15, had to go to the church, do practice for my confirmation, then come back to cricket.
Jeez. That is a tough one.
I had
one.
To go back.
I went back, yeah.
Interrupted by the Lord.
So used to
divine intervention.
Exactly. So, look, kept mum happy, so she was, jeez. That was all good there, but it was a bit of a struggle for mine mentally.
I'm glad you actually still respected your parents and actually did it.
Well,
no chance I'd be doing that.
Well, you have to, another 12s, you retire at 20, so I made my 20 runs always and... And then
always.
Oh yeah, didn't go out too often. Yeah, come on, and then come back and hopefully get another bat if everyone else had gone out.
So you'd be hoping for wickets to fall.
Yeah. I was praying to the Lord.
Well, you got a better chance.
Full circle.
You've just gone and committed to it.
Full
for a while.
Circle. That's great work. That's
you're praying in the church. Please. Go out, so I can come back.
That's the old strike while it's hot tub situation, Rama.
Exactly.
Nice work. Nice work indeed. Yes, you would have done that. You would have had a few weddings in your time on a Saturday. You played that much bloody cricket, you'd have to have.
Well, to be honest, I just don't go to the wedding. Play cricket.
Right.
There's a reception. I always went on the basis that they probably don't, you know, when you're getting married, you're probably not really focusing on who's there and who's not.
That's not true.
That's not true.
Whereas at the reception, you go up and you shake their hand and say, fantastic ceremony.
That's
went
a
really well.
See,
this is a terrific night.
I'm not sure we can have him as part of our world.
What we
this is not friendly.
Well, you know how much it costs to have a person at a wedding?
Yeah, but the cost is the reception, Rammer. It's not the the congregation set up.
You pay for the ceremony as well. There's a cost associated with that.
Could make you earn that food.
I think they're more worried about how much beverage you drink and how much food you eat.
Well,
at the
you
reception.
Don't drink. You drink lemon squash.
I'll give you the tip. I eat a lot. Well, that's actually not true because, as we've discussed before, at weddings, you're not getting much food.
No, chicken or the beef.
And 4 carrots and 2 beans. But
Well, they're good desserts. Always good desserts.
Well, always.
You double up, you get dessert plus the wedding cake.
I'm not so sure.
And by that stage, people are into the refreshments and they're not bothering with the desserts. You can go around table
hop. I was going to say, this is the...
You get table hop.
This is where I really come to the fore when they're out on the dance floor and the desserts come out.
You're pinching their slice.
And so they come back from the dance floor. Oh, where's the desserts? Oh, yeah, sorry. Just haven't come out yet.
So a little man at the back at some stage is going to... get married. He's a little Greek boy.
He's
still a little bit young, isn't he?
He looks a little bit young. He looks a bit young, but he's actually close to 30.
Okay.
He looks 17.
Oh, yeah, he's got greys, hasn't he?
Very gray small hairs, man. Yeah. Very small man.
These are just for men.
I've got a feeling that Adam won't be invited to the wedding. Well, is this the feedback I'm getting from the look in his eye at the back?
Why? I can't see him. Is he disgusted?
He's disgusted that you don't go to the ceremony. Because as part of the Greek fraternity, you've got to go to the wedding.
Must.
You've got to go, mate. Well, this is the thing.
At a wedding.
Then you can start smashing plates later.
I don't dance too often, but at a wedding you dance and have a good time.
No, you don't dance.
And, and how many weddings that you have attended have you been on the dance floor and just dancing around? And,
well, my own.
Getting in the circle and...
No, nah, then that thing where you...
So you cave to peer pressure for your own?
Yes. so you do that thing where you put your hands up and they go under the tunnel type
thing.
Do
that?
Not involved in that sort of activity.
So what do you do? You sit at the table with like the bride or groom's grandma and just talk to her, do you?
Oh, I don't even know what I do, to be honest, but nothing really to get excited
it's
about.
Not really the life of the party.
No. You know that circle thing where you... that's dumb.
At the end when they go around and thank everybody, you're already gone by then. You in the car?
Not involved in that sort of activity.
You don't like people, do you? We've come to this.
Not really. Very antisocial. You know that. But you're no point laughing about it.
Oh, it's funny.
I'm trying. I'm getting better.
I'm not sure you are. No, you're getting worse. No, let's
no
not...
I actually think I am getting better.
No, you're not. You're becoming more stubborn and more
stuck. I told you about
this
the other day. We're in the lift and I started a conversation with the person in the lift. And I said, this is very uncharacteristic of me to start idle chit-chat.
It was most uncharacteristic of you. There must have been a reason. What was the reason?
No, there wasn't.
Were you
that
flirting?
Was,
is that what was happening?
No, no. I won't go there.
Right, okay. Just in case. Speaking of the New Zealand Open, the defending champ who won the 100th edition of the New Zealand Open, which was a very special edition last season, is on the line. He's 3-under through the first round in his title defence, and he's one of our favourite young Aussie golf guns. Zach Murray is his name, and he joins us. Good morning, Zach.
No, good morning, everybody. How are you?
We are very well, thank you, buddy. Very well indeed. Thanks for your time on day two's play of the New Zealand Open. You happy with the first round? 3-under sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, I come out of the blocks firing on all cylinders. I got to 6-under through 10 and then got to the tough holes and the wind sort of picked up and just made a couple of errors. But overall, it was a good result and keeps me in the hunt for the rest of the tournament.
Do you get nervous defending a title? Do you have does that weigh down a little bit on you, or are you just another tournament? You don't really worry about that stuff.
I wouldn't say nervous. Like I get a little bit nervous before I tee off every day, like just a little bit. You know,
yep.
The blood's pumping and whatnot. But I think there's a little extra drive when you come to defend to win. Certainly in the forefront of your mind to. Defend your title, and you know I'm still in the hunt, still got a chance. So it's an exciting time, and it's a great place, Queenstown. So it's even better.
What's life like as a defending champ when you get back to the place of success? Does the red carpet get rolled out? Do you get all the trimmings of being the superstar?
They treat me pretty well. It's they've done a really good job this year, and. I left my wallet on the plane coming back from Mexico in Auckland and they somehow managed to find it. The tournament found it for me. They've just messaged me to say that they've brought it down. So, I was pretty excited when they told me that. So that's probably the best news that I've got. And they're Golf New Zealand fantastic and the tournament, what they do here. So, super lucky to be treated like I am this week.
See, if you were just a qualifier, Zach, they wouldn't bother looking for that.
Probably not. No, they'd probably sell it.
Abu Dhabi, Vic Open, Mexico, now New Zealand. How have you found that travel schedule to start the year off, Zach?
It was a little bit daunting. When I first sort of realised where I'll be going, I'd never really travelled from one side of the world to the other and sort of gone back-to-back tournaments. So, but at the moment, I feel great. You know, I've come back onto the time zone really well, and I feel good. No complaints really. I mean, I've played well, which obviously helps the cause a little bit. I've played well in every event, and I've had some family and friends come with me along the way, so it makes it a little bit easier. For sure.
So what do you do on the plane? Do you want it that sits there and watches movies? Do you sit there and watch some of your round and analyse your swing? Or do you talk to your coach on the plane? How do you use that time, productively when you are flying?
It obviously depends what I've got when I get on the ground. Obviously, this week coming in from Mexico, I wanted to try and rest up as much as I could. So I tried to sleep and I did, which was fortunate, but usually other times I'll just try and get onto the time zone. So if I have to sit back and watch a couple of movies, I do. And yeah, it honestly all just depends, you know, what I've got coming up. But I managed to get some sleep on the plane, and I'm not one to sort of analyse too much. I sort of leave that to my coach Marty to sort of go over, and I just sort of try and enjoy it. And I'm only young. I've got a long, hopefully a long career ahead of me. So I try and keep the brain as less active about the golf as I possibly can, so I can have a bit of longevity.
Rama spoke about some of the golf tournaments you've played in recently, sort of focusing on the WGC in Mexico, where at one point late in the tournament, you were inside the top 15. Mm. Does that, how much confidence does that give you that you can not only play with the big guns, but you can actually match it with them?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it was, last week was fantastic. I got to play with some really great players, and it was pretty cool to see how they go about it, and probably just how aggressive they are, you know, how they back themselves in. And, you know, that's probably the biggest learning curve I have, is that, you know, they go out there to win, and they've got one goal in mind. Whereas sort of my goal probably that week was to try and finish top 10, you know, and I was close in there about to fell away a little bit at the end, but yeah, it was an awesome experience, and it's, I mean, you can't buy that. So it was really fortunate to have that opportunity. And yeah, the game's in good shape, and I've certainly got a long way to go, but it's nice to see where I can improve.
Lucas Herbert speaks about when he first got on the European Tour, and he'd get on the range and see all the star players, and he'd realise, well, gee, I actually hit it as far as they can, and you get out and they play rounds of golf with them, and you think, gee, you know, I can actually do this. The thing with him was that he's just got to do it more consistently. What were some of the things that you learnt playing with some of the good players, or even just on the practice range, where you thought, yeah, I can match it with them, and then where you need to make improvements?
Yeah, I think probably, yeah, as I just mentioned, probably just how aggressive mentally they are. Like, they just, you know, they want to win, and obviously I do as well, but it's just that little bit of extra drive that they have, and because they've been there and done it, it's probably just a comfortable factor. Like, I don't think there's any doubt that obviously Lucas can compete on the world stage, and a lot of the other Aussie young guys as well, that we can compete. It's just a matter of gaining experience and being comfortable. And I always describe it as, you know, going from kindergarten to primary school, then to high school, then to uni, and then getting into, you know, your full-time job. You know, it's just a general transition, and some guys jump up a few levels early and then sort of taper back, and then they get to their final destination at pretty similar time. But yeah, it's just as cliche as it sounds, it's just all about trying to learn as much as you can, and then trying to implement it, you know, in the most efficient way.
Great to have Dean Lester with us on the Friday Form. We love his company on a Friday morning every single week, and when there's Group 1 racing, it's even better. He's back again to help us out. Dino, good morning.
Good morning, Daniel.
Group 1 activity, it's been happening the last couple of weeks. Are we bullish? Are we confident? Or are we a little bit gun-shy after difficulties that played last week at Caulfield?
Yeah, it was a little bit of a challenge last week, but I think more excited for the rematch of Alligator Blood and Catalyst and Chenier. I think that race, the Australian Guineas, is just going to be of the highest quality, and these horses, they're just purely good race horses, and we get to see them in action again tomorrow.
Will you, as a bit of a sidebar, will you be watching the football tonight, or you be at the Valley? Will you be watching the Valley?
I'll be doing a little bit of the channel surfing.
Sounds about right, I reckon. Sounds about right. Now, Nick Quinn is that guy from the Tab, who's normally with us in the studios providing coffees, because he doesn't win very often with his bets.
Well, he was offering a whole full breakfast.
There was a suite of pastries.
Continental breakfast.
Yes. I don't think his little investment got up either, just by the way.
No, it didn't.
No surprise to see him boycott the studio this morning and take us from afar. Nicholas, good morning.
Good morning, Daniel. I'll make sure I have a nice beverage and some food when I'm back in the studio next week.
Yeah, that's the old chestnut, that is. That's an old chestnut that we're not going to fall for, Dino.
We're not falling for that garbage. Absolutely. Righto, so let's have a look at Flemington tomorrow. Headquarters is always good fun, and when there's Group 1 racing, it's even more so. And for those first-time players on the Friday form, what we do is have a look at the quaddy legs and give you a chance to just get your eye in with some of the expertise from two of the greats in racing. The first leg of the quaddy tomorrow is the ATA Bob Hoisted Handicap over the 1,000 metres at headquarters down the fabulous straight there at Flemington. And we've got 11 going around, Dino. Some names that we're all very familiar with in this race. And the favourite in number 6, Fabergino, with Jordan Childs in the saddle, around about 3:40 at tab.com.au.
Yeah, and the fascination of the race too, Daniel, because she's over from WA. She's a very quick mare, very good fresh. Hasn't raced since the Summer Scorcher over there, Carnival. And she'll give a good sight, just a matter of how she handles the straight, etc. But she's right in the mix. But that's the key, is that we're 24 hours out trying to work out how they'll play the straight. They don't know 35 minutes out, the jockeys, how they're going to ride it. So it's, it makes it very, very tricky. I'm going with Embrace Me, number 8. I think both of her runs this time in have been terrific. And Damien Oliver stays aboard here with her. And I'm going to go with her to beat God of Thunder, number 4. I thought his first up win had merit. And he's got good Melbourne form when he's been down here. Chances, though, to 7, Gift of Power, who's got a massive weight turnaround on Soothing from one of the last times they met and can sprint well fresh. Soothing's there with a chance because she has one down the straight, and I'm putting Fabergino in. She's very, very quick. At some stage, I think she'll set up a big lead and just might keep going. So a pretty open start to the quaddy.
Righto, Quinny. We've got an unknown from the West coming over. They've had good history coming over in the last couple of seasons. They've picked their races pretty well, it seems. What's the market say about Fabergino?
Fabergino, a 3:40 market leader. God of Thunder, 4:40. Soothing, 4:80. There's been money at longer odds for number 3, William Thomas, who's been 19 into 13. Dino, did you leave out number 4, God of Thunder, with that quaddy?
No, second elect.
Second elect. But you did leave out number 3, William Thomas. Maybe the 1,000 first up, or you just have a few ahead of the horse that was a little bit catching and testing for punters at time last preparation.
Yeah, I thought, I think the 1,000 tempo will suit him. He'll be strong late, but whether from the inside draw he'll be back and have too much to do. But he was the one I reluctantly left out.
Right. Any moves for anything else, Quinny?
Not overly, no. Really? Most of the money has been with a top couple in the market. Gift of Power, the former Kiwis, trimmed up from 12 into 10.
Righto, so a bit of an open start, a bit of an unknown, as Dino was talking about with how the straight's going to play, and the unknown from the West too, just throwing a little spanner in the works. But Rammer, you have one job on the Friday form every single week, and that is to read the numbers as they are given by the great Dean Lester. What are the first leg numbers, please?
8, 4, 7, 1, and 6.
8, 4, 7, 1, 6 in the first leg. The second leg is why we're all so excited. The Kennedy Australian Guineas, a $1 million 3-year-old Group 1 set weights event over the mile. And we've got the resumption of what we hope is going to be a terrific rivalry for a couple of years to come. Alligator Blood going head-to-head with Catalyst. We've got Delasane in there as well. Alabama Express in hot form. And Chenier, as Dino said before, is a really interesting runner in this after the last time these horses met, Dino. How do you assess the form from the last time out? A couple of different form lines coming in to get your selections for this race.
Yeah, well, Daniel, the key here is that Alligator Blood and Catalyst have had sort of little breaks in their preparations, but they've been up essentially for a fair while. And whether Chenier, who's had that long spell, was closing off very nicely at his first up run, whether he can actually peg them back, and he's relatively fresh on the scene. So, look, I'm trusting that form line. I just can't tip against Alligator Blood. I just love his determination when the fight was on last start in the CSA Stakes. He just wanted the win. Catalyst will be better for that run, I'm sure. He's going to be a major stumbling block, and be no shock to me if Chenier beat them both. I would have loved to have seen him in a bigger field, 12 or 14 horse field, bit more, not as tactical, because he's still very raw. He's the sort of horse that the other day he just couldn't sprint off the back of them, but on the line he was so strong. I think the 1600 is going to suit, but they're the three for me. good horses in the race. Delasan drawn for a better run, but I just think he might be looking for further. Alabama Express is off the CF Horse Stakes, so he's a good talent. And the horse from WA in Superstorm has got a big finish on him, but whether he can give away a start to these horses and beat them, I would very much doubt. So I'm trusting the three horses out of the CSA Stakes.
It's very rare for me to get involved in this activity.
Well, normally you're asleep under the couch.
But I wanted to ask Dino about Alligator Blood, because listening to David Van Dyke yesterday, just when he was with Michael Felgate, the concern about the gut buster that they had when they went sort of, you know, down the straight in that duel, does that worry you at all, Dino?
It wasn't from the get-go, though, Adam. It was a building speed, and, yeah, they did go at each other for the last 400, but it wasn't our Waverley Star and Bone Crusher where they took off 1,200 from home. It was a building speed, and then they just really hit their straps the last 400. So I'm hoping he's got one more big run at least in him. I wouldn't be rushing to back him for the All-Star Mile after hearing that interview yesterday, but I'm thinking that he's such a warrior that I think he can get the job done again.
It was a great insight, Daniel, just listening to both David and, you know, the trainer and the jockey sitting there talking to Michael yesterday. It was really, really good radio. If you haven't heard it, jump on the website, rsn.net.au, just to get a great insight, not only into the horse, but the trainer, the jockey, and just the preparation going into this, considering what had happened in the CSA Stakes.
Quinny, bringing you in here, the market's firmly in favour of, well, not firmly in favour, but Catalyst has gained favouritism from tab.com.au punters, even after the loss to Alligator Blood in the CS Hayes. Are you expecting that to change?
Look, not really. I'm surprised at how strong the money for Catalyst who's been, who's now a 260 market leader. Alligator Blood, a 310 second elect. Alabama Express at 6 with Chenier Delasan best the rest at $15. Two questions for the great Dean Lester. Dino, one, are you surprised at the price differential between the top two? And when was the last time you remember such an exciting lead-up to a race in terms of two absolute superstars? So mine, it takes me back to the 2016 Cox Plate with Winx up against Hartnell.
Yeah, well, I'd probably agree with that, Nick, and it was probably started 2 weeks ago. We had great interest in their clash 2 weeks ago, and because they delivered so strongly, tomorrow's going to be a great race. And yeah, I can understand that the thought that Catalyst maybe at 1600, that win in the Guineas in New Zealand was outstanding, that he's only had the two runs in, but he's only had a relatively short break too. So, they're two and I think three very good horses. I'm not leaving Chenier out of this discussion at all, because I think if he gets it right on the day, he's got the talent to match it at least with these two and maybe even beat them.
From a price perspective, we've got Catalyst currently $260, Alabama Express at $6 with Chenier, Alligator Blood at $310. Do you think Chenier might trim up a little bit, or do you think it's about what they're going to jump now?
Yeah, he'd be the one that I think might trim a little bit. I think if there's going to be much of a move, but the structure of the field's been pretty well set for, you know, a week or 10 days, so I think the market's pretty much the same as well.
And just weighing up, just for those playing at home, Dino, more from a form perspective, weighing up the win of Alabama Express, Wait for Age against the older horses in the all, and coming back to 3L Company here against clearly some outstanding competitors. How do you put weight on the Wait for Age victory in terms of the form reference and why you would or wouldn't select him for this race?
So he's the one I thought did have a really hard run last start. He was three wide working and was really tough to the line. It was a really brave win, but he had a very hard run. He's had 3 weeks to recover. He goes to the 1600 for the first time. That would be my little query, that even though he's only had the two runs in, he had a really hard run last start. So if he's over that, he's certainly somewhere in the mix as well, because as you said, he beat the older horses last time out.
It's going to be a great race, the Australian Guineas over the mile tomorrow at headquarters. So Rammer, those numbers, please.
One question from Whitey and he's gone.
What's he doing?
He's just disappeared.
He just took off.
He's disappeared. Those numbers, race 7, 1, 4 and 7.
Great to have our friends in Tassie on board. We're having a look at the Flemington Quaddie tomorrow with Dean Lester, the world's greatest form analyst, and Nick Quinn, that guy from the Tab. We're two legs in to the quaddy, which means we need to get to race 8, the third leg of the quaddy, the Blamey Stakes, again over the mile. And we've got 9 going around, Dino. 50 stars for Hayes Debenig is favourite at tab.com.au.
I think he should be too, Daniel. He won this race last year. I thought he was terrific first up in the race we were just talking about, the All Stakes behind Alabama Express. He doesn't really fire at Caulfield, but that was a good run. But Flemington, he's a winner here of this race, as I mentioned, and second in the Cantala in the spring and fifth in the McKinnon. I think he's got the right credentials. It looks a race devoid of a lot of speed. He can probably race a bit handier than we've often seen. I think he's the one to beat. I think Guizzo will run well. I really liked him last start, and he ran third, but Miss Siska has gone on to win the Peter Young since then, so the form's good, but he didn't get clear at any stage, and the race sort of passed him by. I thought he ran really well, and I think he's the main danger at a bit of a price. 5, Ring-a-ding-ding. I don't know if he really enjoyed being cluttered up in amongst them last start. He can improve. 7, Night's Watch. He just needs to win another race, simple as that. He's a good talent, but he misses the start, and he needs luck. But Flemington does probably suit, and maybe 3, Admiral's Joker. I don't know if he's right at his best, but gets the 1600 third up, and he's probably ready to fire. But I think 50 stars is the one to beat. Guizzo's a bit of value.
Quinny, what's happening in the market?
Guizzo's attracted support at $8, 50 stars, a 360 market leader. And there's been money for the punters, Pell Galaxy Raider, who's been $13 out to 15, back into 13. Two quick questions. Dino, number 7, Night's Watch. You mentioned needs another win. You've got the horse in your quaddy, but not in your top 3. So, again, maybe the jury's out just a wee bit, and I see you've left out Sosie Bond. Any concerns there, or just a case that you can't put them all in?
Probably can't put them all in. He's going to get a good run, Sosie Bond, and he'll run well. He's running consistently. With regard to Night's Watch, that's the key. You know, he's missing the start's the problem. He gets into an awkward spot, and he's just constantly overbet. If he puts it all together, he can win a race like this for sure. But, gee, he's very well found again tomorrow.
Rightio. Rama, can you please give us an update on the numbers? Thank you.
Race 8, 2, 8. 5, 7, and 3.
2, 8, 5, 7, and 3. Before we leave that race, just going through the, when I was reading the favourite 50 stars training combination, the Hayes Debenny. Dina, do you know when it's just going to be Hayes and Debenny because David's off?
Not till, I think, about May or June, I think.
Right, okay.
I think, it's because, David starts training there in September, I think, and then so he'd want to get over there a bit before and sort out the horses and get ready for the new season.
With David gone, we'll get the A set plus more slabs.
Oh, slabs from Benny.
Yeah.
Benny will be making sure we get plenty of access to the slabs. It's a good race with good trainers that won the Blamey Stakes. Alexander, Hayes, Dominic Valor, Friedman, McAvoy, Waller, Purcell, Begg, all training the runners in the Blamey Stakes. So that is a good horses and good stables race, the Blamey tomorrow, which leads us into the last leg of the quaddy, the last one. It's also the get-out stakes. Different combo, though. 1,200 metres down the straight. We're not sure how it's going to play just yet, as you heard Dino talking about before. And there are 14 going around. If you go down to a number 11 for Johnny Sadler with Mickey D in the saddle, you'll find the favourite. Second up tomorrow, Dino. It's a great name. A big night out. It's 4:40 at tab.com.au.
Yeah, I'm a real fan of this horse, Daniel. After he ran first up, I made him the horse to follow on correct weight. And I think I'd love to have seen him step up maybe a little bit in trip, but he'll be so strong late, and he seemed to handle the straight very well first up. I'm going with him, but good chances to Nico, number 5, who comes through the same form line. I think he's got a very good chance for the Maestro. 7, Chicago Cub, just having a great preparation and seems to like the straight. Drops a lot in weight on that win last start, but chances also to 1, Just Highfalutin, who's got a big weight, but she is a classy mare. And 2, Fox Hall. Just thought he was over the odds. Ran okay second up. That's a very good form reference, and he could run a bit of a race. But, I think Big Night Out's very well suited here to win second up.
Quinny, what do you got for us in the market, please?
Tomiko heads the market at 4:40. Big Night Out, a 4:60 second leg. Now, Dino has got number 2, Fox Hall, in his numbers there. And David Gately gave a good push for this horse as well and has been a firmer at big odds, $34 into 23. Probably the best long shot on the card at Flemington tomorrow. It might be a good cheeky way to end the day.
Hang on a second. Are you trying to infiltrate the Ramarafi territory with that sort of combination, that sort of conversation then?
No, I'm not, for one very good reason. I know it's not the Ramarafi.
Righto. Well, don't let Gator think he's got a chance to just get his roughies into the Friday form. We have one man and one man only giving his roughies in the Friday form, and that is Dean Lester.
Yeah, but when Dino and Gator give a good push for a roughie, it's just like ice cream with topping.
And sprinkles. You've got to have sprinkles on top when you have the ice cream with topping. Rammer. Rammer.
Race 9, 11, 5, 7, 1, and 2.
Righto. So you know what's going to happen, Rammer. There's going to be someone who's just caught the end of that conversation who's going to say, oh, bloody hell, I've missed the numbers. Can Rammer please go through it again for me from the start, please, for the quaddie tomorrow at Flemington?
Okay, race 6, 8, 4, 7, 1, and 6. Race 7, 1, 4, and 7. Race 8, 2, 8, 5, 7, and 3. Race 9, 11, 5, 7, 1, and 2.
Righto, they are your numbers for the quaddie tomorrow at Flemington. Now, it's a question without notice, boys. There's some outstanding racing in Sydney tomorrow, too. We've got two Group 1s up there, the Surround Stakes and the Chipping Norton. Quinny, I might go to you firstly for the markets on those two races if you get a chance, because everyone loves a Group 1 affair, and Sydney racing is always good fun to get involved in as well. What for the Surround and for the Chipping Norton, who are the movers and who are the favourites, please?
Race number 6 of the Surround Stakes, Funstar, a 340 market leader, Flit at 360, Probabil 480, Lie at 6. I reckon Flit is a big chance to get a run in the All-Star Mile if she does win tomorrow, so maybe have a coin on her at the $26. Well, Tiao Kao Shah, can he win his first race in Australia? He's a 270 drifting favourite in the Tab Chipping Norton Stakes. Dreamforce, a $5 second elect, Avilius, $6.50, Fierce Impact at $7. Dino, do we have a luck tester up in Sydney tomorrow?
Flit into Tiak, our shark for me.
Okay.
I thought Flit was outstanding first up, and I think the blinkers might have been the key there, and she can win again, and Tiak, our shark, should be able to beat that field. He's beaten most of them before, so I think he can win.
You were pretty confident on that too, Dino. You stepped straight into that.
Yeah, why not?
So, Quinny, for those playing at home, I'm not sure if you've got your calculator with you. If there was to be a Sydney sort of formula bet, just for the punters out there who are listening, what would 6-1 into 7-3 look like with the multiplier?
$10.26 pre-multiplier.
Oh, $10, if you don't mind. Righto, that might get a dollar from mine a little bit later on. In fact, maybe during the break. That's what it might...
No.
Well, what are you saying now?
Well, I noticed with interest number 7 is in the Surround is scratched. How romantic.
Oh, the shark. What's the shark doing?
He will be devastated not going to Sydney this weekend.
He will. We'll have to find out more about that with Blue Eyes on Racing Pulse from the Friday Form Focus with the shark. We'll see what that's all about. Dino, speaking of formula bets, one of the great things we do here on The Breakfast Club and what you've done for many years is give the punters a chance through your eyes earn some cash on the weekend with a little double. What do you got for us tomorrow for the formula bet and who are you playing for?
We're playing for Franny Oaten of Bentley East, and for Franny, a $40 win bet, race 2, number 4, King of Leah Grants, $40 the win race 4, number 2, Sylvia's Mother, and a $40 all up of the two. Race 2, number 4, into race 4, number 2, for Franny Oaten of Bentley East.
Good luck to you, Franny. Race 2, number 4, Quinny, into race 4, number 2. Pre-multiplier?
Pre-multiplier, $9.12. That is a big setback for me because I made King of Leah Grants the lay of the week in the paper, and the jockey sent me a text message telling me I've got that one wrong. And King of Leah Grants will be winning. So, Dino, once again, smash me there.
So, who's
like the Damien Lane?
Damien Lane, right? Oh, yeah, okay. So you made it. Can you explain why you've made it the lay of the weekend? If you're going to put it out there and certainly back over it like you just did then, why have you made it the lay of the weekend?
No, I thought. Well, I'm going toe to toe with Dino. This always ends with me needing the trainer to throw in the white towel as I'm on the canvas, but I thought I had every chance against Ryan Spender. Last start was pretty short in the market against what I thought was a better field tomorrow.
Okay, righto. So that'll be winning, no doubt. that's what I love. You know what, Rammer? This is what you know what's happened here.
There's a lot of races.
There's a lot of races we've covered here. Yes. A lot of races.
A couple in Sydney.
The four legs of the quaddy. We've got race two and race four involved in the formula bet. So there's six. Then we've got a double in Sydney. So there's eight races we've got covered tomorrow. And then we're still waiting for the Rammers Ruffy, which may or may not be in one of those races. I'm not quite sure. But it's eight races already that we've got won.
What a Saturday.
We're just in the queue already. Dino, can you help us out with a Rammer Ruffy?
Yeah, well, I mentioned him earlier. He's my second pick in race eight, but I think he's over the odds, and that's Guizzo. Race eight, number eight.
Race eight, number eight. And around about $8, is that right, Quinny? Did you say?
That's exactly right. $8, and he's so consistent, Guizzo. Hopefully can run into the money again. Even $2.40 to run a flake.
Race eight, number eight, $8. That's triple eight sort of stuff. That's good luck in any language. Any language. Dino, great to have you with us on the Friday Form. Cannot wait to see what happens tomorrow at Flemington. Look forward to more of your analysis on RSN 927. Go get them.
Terrific. Thanks, guys.
All the best. Dean Lester with us, the world's greatest form analyst. Now, there's some feedback coming through. Feedback coming through for race two at Flemington for a horse called Dabir.
This is why the Shark is staying in Melbourne.
Oh, is that right? Okay, yeah. The Shark's staying in Melbourne to see Dabir, number two, race two, number two, tomorrow for the Chris Waller stable.
And then?
Irish horse. For an Adelaide Cup trial.
How romantic is next week?
How romantic next Saturday in the CUNY, says our man the Shark. Okay, right, some feedback coming through. I'm sure we'll talk more about that after 8:30 with Blue Eyes on the Friday Form Focus. Quinny! You didn't come through with the pastries, which Whitey's very upset about, to the point where he stormed out of the studio after his one question, which was unusual in itself.
It was a good one, though.
It was a good one. Don't get me wrong. You're all about quality. You missed last week, but what can you do for us this week?
Geez, I love Sylvia's Mother. Race four, number two, she'll be winning. And race five, number one, Age of Chivalry at $3.60. Hopefully I can get back in Damien Lane's good books with that one.
So is that a double?
Yeah, why not? Right. I'll bring you food regardless. I've got to get back in the good books. I'm about to have a chat to David Van Dyke. That's why I'm not with you this morning. And Alligator Blood looks absolutely beautiful.
Plays it into the offside. They take a quick single, and there's a century for Bo Webster. On the misfield, he gets two more. 101 off 101 balls. A runner-ball century to Webster. A fantastic counter-attacking innings.
It was a brilliant innings in the first innings for Tasmania in their shield clash with WA. They were chasing 371 and ended up in front with 390. It was on the back of Bo Webster's magnificent century, 187 he went on to make off that and a runner ball rate of 187 balls. And they ended up winning with him at the crease yesterday, guiding the ship home with Tim Payne, which was an outstanding win for Tasmania. And I'm sure he's pumped about it this morning. Bo, good morning.
Morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Fantastic performance by you and your boys. When you saw 371 put up early doors from WA and what seemed to be, outside of Cameron Green's century, a difficult pitch to bat on, did you think it was going to be a bridge too far?
Yeah, definitely. It was quite challenging at Bellary day one. We probably didn't roll as well as we liked on that. So, high 300s, Cameron Green batted exceptionally well, but it was still a tricky wicket. And I think our innings showed that as well with 130 or 40, I think we were there. But, yeah, it was nice to take a first big lead, something we probably haven't done too much this year.
So they were in raptures over Kem Green's 158 not out in the first innings. A lot of people around the nation, cricket lovers, were saying, how good is this kid? And what a great innings that was, considering how difficult it was to bat. And then you get out there and say, hold my beer, 187 off 187. Why were you able to master those conditions so effectively?
I know it's a bit of a different game. I've battled a lot down at the top of the order. It's a bit of a different game down there at seven, something I haven't done too much of, and playing with a little bit of more freedom after the big bash and sort of just continued on my form there and haven't changed too much. I don't know what about it. So, it's no doubt a bit lucky there throughout the innings, but just found a way to put a bit of pressure back on the bowls. I think that goes a long way when you have to battle on these 300 wickets, especially at Bell Reeve.
It helps when you get dropped on. What was it, 98 or 99?
97, I think
97.
It was.
97, jeez, that was it.
Yeah, I was Simon Big Mac and a beer. Sure.
Did it help free you up after that? Because obviously you batted beautifully and so forth, but to get that big score, it was a pretty special effort from you.
Yeah, no doubt. I think every batsman will tell you the weight comes off the shoulders after the triple figures, and it does free you up a bit, and you sort of just try and make it a big one while you're out there and while you're seeing the ball well and while you're in good form. So, yeah, no doubt it was
it was a nice feeling getting the triple figures, and I sort of just played the same way. I suppose I did the dip of 100, and just, yeah, was lucky enough to bat it out with the tail, and our lower order did really well to stick it out. I think we had a couple of important 50-run partnerships there for our last 2 wickets. So, yeah, went a long way to beat it down.
Now, you touched on what you did in the Big Bash just a couple of minutes ago. We often talk on this program that the Big Bash is so different to four-day cricket. It's almost like a different sport. But you seem that you have been able to at least take your confidence from what you were able to achieve this summer into the longer form of the game.
Yeah, definitely. I think it sort of feels like your balls in the way, you're just pushing batting down the order there at 6 and 7, where I probably would bat in the rest of the season there. Tasmania, I think it's just a, like you said, confidence thing. If the ball's in your area, you've got the confidence that, you know, go through with it and clear the rope, or we'll hit the ball hard enough to get through the field and get the scoreboard moved.
Nope.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. No, we lost you there for momentarily. Yeah, so you're just sort of saying that the confidence levels have made a big difference to you, just maybe a belief thing.
Yeah, definitely. The belief thing of once you're in good form, every batter will tell you, try not to waste the good form, and once you get in to really try and cash in, and I feel like I'm hitting the ball really well at the moment. I feel like if the ball's in the zone, I've got the confidence to go through with it, and that comes with being in good form from a Big Bash, and also having the confidence and the coaching staff and paying and playing my natural game down there in the lower order for us.
But do you get to that stage, and you're 26 now, so you're still relatively young from a cricketer, but do you get to that stage where you've just got confidence when you walk out to the crease and you know you're going to make runs?
I'm definitely not, especially not at Bell Reeve. It's quite a tricky batting wicket to throw, especially on day 1 and 2, which I think what Mark Cameron Green's 100 quite special. It was a very tricky wicket early, especially with injuries all the years in the back half of the season. So, it definitely doesn't feel like it's, you're walking out and making runs. It almost feels the opposite, I suppose, when you're going out there. These good attacks on a dicey wicket, so you just got to, once you're in form, I suppose, and you get in, you just got to try not to waste it.
So take us through that, Bo. You talk about when you go out, you don't feel like you're going to make runs. How do you get into the mindset in the early part of your innings to really focus and concentrate? Is it really a patience thing, or is it playing a couple of particular shots that make you feel good?
I think everyone's different. Yeah, for me, it's probably that last one. Yeah, trying to put a bit of pressure back on the bowler so I do get into my innings a bit quicker, maybe play, taking a risk here or there on some shots, but everyone's different. It's obviously a bit different at the top of the order with guys like Dorn and Silk who are taking the brother new ball when the bowlers are the freshest. So everyone's got their different game plans to try and get through the first part of their innings, which is obviously the most vulnerable, and try and get into their innings. But yeah, like I said, I think mine's where I can put a bit more pressure back on the bowlers. There's a bit more of a counter attack down there at the lower order with guys like Tim Payne and Ben McDermott. So yeah, that's definitely one way I look at trying to get into my innings.
Golf fans, you'll know the name Ryan Fox. He's he is my favourite New Zealand golfer, one of my favourite golfers on the planet. He's back home getting ready for the New Zealand Open. In fact, he's already one round in, 2 under after the first round, getting ready for day 2's play today. He joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Ryan.
Morning, guys. How are you doing?
We're going really well, thanks, buddy. And really appreciate your time mid-tournament. I'm not sure how many interviews you do mid-tournament, but we think it's great that you do it. And were you happy with yesterday?
Yeah, I was actually. I let a couple slip towards the end of the day, but it was probably one of the strangest weather conditions I've ever had for a round of golf. I mean, it was, at one stage it was blowing a 4-club wind, you know, close to 50 or 60 k's, and then sort of for our last 4 holes it was all over the place. It would drop down, it would blow from a completely different direction. It was strange. I think I was Steve Williams on the bag, and we're standing in the 8th fairway, and look behind us and the trees are going left to right. We look at the flag and the flag's going right to left, and Steve's just laughing and going, we've never seen anything like this, and it was just a very strange day.
It sounds like it's hard to sort out what you're going to do when that's happening. So you've done well to get to 2 under through the afternoon and walk away with the red figures on the scorecard. What about today's play? What's the forecast for you, and who are you out there with today?
I'm playing with Warnie today.
Oh, you got Warnie?
Which is nice. Well, he struggled a little bit yesterday. He's been travelling all over the place like I have, so it may not both of us yesterday a little bit towards the end. But look, weather forecast looks strange again. I'm standing outside by the 17th green at Millbrook now, and it's actually raining, and there's no wind, and there's forecast to blow about 40 k's out of the northwest and be sunny and warm this afternoon. So it's a very, very strange day. But Also playing with Demi Papadatos, who's a previous winner here as well, and he played nicely yesterday for 2-under. So we're both in a pretty good place after the first round.
Do you feel an extra burden playing at home and being such a high-profile golfer in New Zealand? We often talk on these parts about the tennis effect, the Sam Stosur effect on the pressure in the Australian Open and having to live up to that. Do you feel that burden playing in the New Zealand Open?
A little bit. I mean, obviously, I put a bit of pressure on myself to play. Well, this is one of the biggest events of the year for me, but I don't feel any external pressure so much. You know, the support's great. We had a lot of people out yesterday morning watching, and I'm sure we'll have plenty out this afternoon. So, you know, I don't necessarily feel that pressure, but it's great to have the home crowd and you know, all the extra support you get, which is, it makes it a lot more fun out there.
So the question we want to ask you is, how the hell do you hit the ball so far? For someone that isn't 6 foot and you're one of the longest hitters in the world, not just in New Zealand, where does that power come from?
To be honest, I've always had it. I don't really know. I've always had decent timing. I played a lot of cricket and tennis growing up, and it was always the same mentality. I wanted to hit a cricket ball hard, I wanted to hit fours and sixes, and I wanted to hit a tennis ball hard. And got some pretty decent sporting genes in my family as well, with the old man playing rugby, obviously, and my grandfather actually played cricket for New Zealand on my mum's side. So, I think I just got a bit lucky in that regard, and I've always had pretty decent sequencing and timing, and that's sort of what it's about. You look at someone like Rory as well, who's, he's shorter than me, probably weighs about 20 kilos less than me, and he's long too. So it's not necessarily about size up here, it's about, how much wind and unwind and timing and everything you can get in your body. And I've been lucky. I've got a little bit of that just naturally, I think.
And Half and I often talk on this show about you as a golfer because we love watching you play, not just how hard you hit the ball and far you hit the ball, but your attacking nature. You are a really aggressive golfer in the way you go about it. Is that something that has always been there? And then you say you've played other sports. You'd be the same mindset in other sports?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was always, as I said, I played tennis and cricket growing up, and it was always about hitting fours or sixes and trying to winners and big serves and tennis. So I always had that mentality. I think I probably grew into it a little bit with golf. Early on, my driver was probably more of a burden than it was a help. It went quite far, but it also went quite far sideways as well. So I probably played a little less aggressive, a few years ago than I do now, but yeah, it's come to a point now where driver's probably the straightest club in my bag and something I really feel like if I drive it well, I can take advantage of. So, it's nice to have that in the bag. And I think, you look at all the stats in golf, you've got to play aggressive now. And, it's almost better having a career goal where you miss a few cuts, but when you play well, you finish really highly or win, and rather than being the guy that plays conservatively and makes a bunch of cuts but finishes 30th. And, golf is just trending that way now, and I certainly add to that a little bit.
The captain of the Australian Netball Diamonds, Caitlin Bassett, who's getting ready for a big fundraiser on Sunday in Sydney. The Diamonds take on the Super Netball All-Stars, and the big sea bass is on the line. Good morning, Skipper.
Good morning. Am I not a big name internationally as well, being Diamonds captain, or is it purely just here in Australia?
Well, you're a big name. I'll give you that as well, but certainly a massive name in Australia.
I'm just letting you know I'm listening. It's all good. I'm up and out of bed. Don't worry.
Well, you're up and out of, which we love about you. It's fantastic. You must be excited about this game on Sunday.
I am. I can't wait to see all my teammates. It's not often we get the opportunity to come together and play and, to do something as cool as having this fundraiser to help out all these people who have been affected by the bushfires, I think is a pretty cool opportunity.
So we've been talking about the AFL game tonight at Marvel Stadium through the week and what level of competition and intensity will be in the contest. What are you expecting from the game on Sunday against the Super Netball All-Stars from the Diamonds? Because there's a few things at play. Lisa Alexander's final game in charge. You've got Caitlin Thwaites, who is another one of our favourites here on The Breakfast Club, saying goodbye to the Diamonds as well. But it's a fundraiser, so how do you attack this?
Yeah, look, it is a tough one. I think whenever you put elite athletes out on court, you can't tell them to go half-half. And there's going to be a lot of fierce competition and some great matchups happening out there on court. So, look, whenever we get out there in the green and gold, it is to win, and that is my goal, definitely. I'm sure it'll be nice to send Lisa and Caitlin out with a win as well. So, I'm going to say it now. That's definitely our aim.
Now, Caitlin, how are you from long range?
Yeah, look, I actually don't mind a long range shot. I do it at training. But when I was growing up, I was told I had to work the ball to the post. So that's kind of ingrained in my netball play, is that, you know, hold position to the post so you can have those close shots, which is obviously a higher percentage. But exciting to see, you know, the initiative of having double points. Hopefully we won't have to use them. Look, I'd be happy if we got a great lead and I could shoot all my shots from underneath the post. But I think, obviously, for the likes of a Caitlin Thwaites or a Gretel Tippett, who's great at a long bomb, I think it's great for them to show off a bit.
No, don't worry about that rubbish. It's all about showing off and taking as many two-point shots as you can.
Look, only if they go in. I think it adds a dampener if you're shooting all these long-range shots and they're missing. And obviously the defenders love it as well. So, yeah, look, obviously the win is key. There has been a few rule changes, which will make it a little bit confusing for us. We've never played these rules before, so I guess we'll just see how we go.
What, I mean, take us through the build-up to it. Are you going to have a training session together, or is it just one of those ones where you just turn up on the day and play? How's the next sort of 24, 48-hour build-up?
Yeah, look, there's not a lot of time. The girls fly in on Saturday afternoon, and we get to have a quick run around before we bed down for the night. All of the team, the All-Stars as well, are all staying in Sydney together. So because we all play together and a lot of us are in teams, we all know each other very well, and our wider Diamond squad are playing for the All-Stars as well, so it'll be good to catch up with them and see them. And then obviously when we jump out on court on Sunday, it'll be battle lines drawn. But I'm looking forward to the opportunity, of training with the team and getting to see what everyone's been up to in the last couple of months.
Because we talk on this program about how you netballers have the longest pre-seasons in the history of the world.
It's true.
So how fit are you? How sort of ready are you for the match? And how much of it is you just in this massive training block?
Yeah, look, we have been in this huge training block. I think we're about 5 weeks down and we still have 8 weeks to go. So it has been nose to the grindstone and a lot of work in the gym. So it's great to be able to play a game and actually put all those things that we've been working hard at training to the test. And I can't wait. I think it's going to be a great spectacle for the fans, really exciting for them to see. It's not often we do something like this. There used to be a series back in the day which was the Diamonds versus the rest of the world, and they had a team made up of internationals, but that got canned a long time ago. So I think it's fantastic for a spectator to see, the Diamonds hitting up the rest of the world, which will be great.
Ash Brazel is going to be busy this weekend. She's playing tonight in the AFLW and then playing on Sunday for the Diamonds. How's that going to work, do you reckon? Is it limited minutes for Ash on Sunday, or is she full steam ahead?
Yeah, look, Ash is extremely fit, and I'm going to assume she's going to be running in centre as well, so she's going to be doing a lot of work on Sunday. But, one of the rules that we have is rolling subs, so she's going to be running on and running off the court and hopefully getting a little bit more of a break. And that's obviously our aim, is managing players. We're not at international prep level at the moment, and so we don't want to have any injuries. Sorry, my dog is chasing me around with a pig in its mouth. So I guess we just have to be really careful. We've got 14 players on the bench, which is more than we ever have. So we should be able to rest a few bodies and make sure we manage player loads accordingly.
What sort of dog?
Oh, it's a Hungarian Vizsla. He's not mine. I do some pet sitting because Sydney is very expensive to live in. So I've got four dogs at the moment, and one of them is just chasing me around with a little squeezy pig in his mouth. So
are you telling me that the captain of the Australian Diamonds, an international sporting superstar, is sitting dogs?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.